No, he's that kind of man. He's that kind of manager. He's forever, you know.
Slimy.
Yeah, slimy, weaselly. I mean, not going too personal here, Alan. Sorry.
As Reading's FA Cup dream dies in heartbreaking fashion at Bedeschi Stadium, we reflect on another season of Cup joy and league regret that's been more erratic than Alan Pardew's view on penalties. We'll tell you why the rest of the season still matters, plus give some early thought towards next season, right here on the Tyler 10 Podcast, episode 89, take 3. More on that in just a moment, but my name is Daniel Wimish, editor of thetylerlesden.com. Thank you very much for hitting that download button once again, and an even bigger thank you to those of you who have taken part in our crowdfunding campaign. It's been going for a few weeks now, and a lot of you have stepped up to the plate and gone that extra mile, but we still need some more help. So if you do have that spare couple of quid going at the end of the month, why not help improve this unprofessional joke of a podcast and lift us up to at least semi-professional joke of a podcast level? And if you do so, there is a chance to pick up one of our brand new Tyler's Den mugs, nicely designed by Sam Hardacre. Very much worth having. If you go and check the Twitter feed at around about 8 o'clock Monday morning, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. But more on that over the coming weeks, I'm sure a few of them will make their way onto eBay. Anyway, joining me tonight for tonight's show, a man who has elevated himself from bench regular to starting lineup, almost an irreplaceable part of the podcast now, one Mr. Steve Curtis, Raw Hoops. Hello, welcome back.
Hello, thanks for having me back. I'm the Tylehurst End's very own Ola John. Bring the magic.
Yep, you started the season out of favour, but you've shown what you can do now. We've given you that run in the side and you've not let us down.
My stamina is probably as good as Ola John's as well, to be honest.
Yeah, Johnny has turned into more like Paulo Hurtado. I think he's sort of loan move to Portugal. I think he fancies some warmer climates.
Good on him. The weather is not that great, is it?
Yeah, do not blame him one bit. And also joining us this week is Dallas and assistant editor Mark Mayo. Mark, hello.
Yep, thanks for having me. I was just thinking, you mentioned the mugs there. I thought you were getting some new Tyler Stend assistant editors for the website.
No, come on. I pay you not very well. So, you know.
In water.
In water. And once again, this podcast is not brought to you by Buxton. They've still not responded to our sponsorship, please. So if you're listening, or if you, you know, provide some bottled water that you fancy helping us out, you know the email address, thetylerstend@gmail.com. But enough of my shilling, there is a lot to get to. And unfortunately, as referenced in the opener, this isn't the first take we've had of this podcast. We had a very catastrophic technology fail that basically rendered the first 35, 40 minutes that we'd recorded useless. So anything that we mess up for the next bits of the show, you can presume that the original version was better. That is our excuse.
Yeah, that is absolutely spot on.
Yeah, that is the first time in 89 episodes I've ever lost basically three quarters of a show before. So it's a bit like the game against Palace. You know, you think you're all the way through, you're battling hard, and you just about think you're getting to the finish line, and no. I don't know if Mike Dean had anything to do with the crash on this occasion, but yeah, we'll do our best. The show might be slightly more truncated than used to. We won't be getting to a planned pub chat we had just because of time constraints, but it just gives you something to look forward to for next week anyway. But without further ado, let's get on to that Palace defeat.
The Tylehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So by now, I'm sure you all know, the FA Cup dream is over. That 2-0 defeat to Crystal Palace on Friday, knocking us out of the competition, denying us that trip to Wembley, and for one person in this podcast, denying him a trip to Wembley for the second successive year. The dream's over, Chance, in fairly heartbreaking fashion. But before we get on to that game, just sort of very quickly bring up the game that preceded it, since we last recorded a podcast that saw Huddersfield beat Reading 3-1. Last Tuesday night. I only bring it up in the context of the team selection and changes for that game. Now, Brian McDermott made 6 changes going into the game at the John Smith Stadium. My question to you two both is, was that enough or was that too many?
I'm going to be like Goldilocks and say it was just right. It's to be expected, I think. I don't know. If he made fewer, you would have moaned. If he made more, I think anyone would have moaned in any situation, to be honest. But the players he rested, you can see why he rested them. The players he brought in, you can see why he brought them in. That may well be the last we see of Andrew Taylor, mind.
Yeah, that's why I was quite happy with the amount of changes we made, because aside from the few people who went up there, it didn't really have much impact on our season or on the form that we were going in. And as Taylor made the sort of mistake and we saw a few other dodgy performances, it's useful for McDermott to know that these players aren't players that you could long-term rely on. So we've moved forward in that sense. We lost the game because of a silly error, so it wasn't the worst performance in the world, and we'll move on.
Yeah, the only thing bad thing for me was that it was, again, mostly the defence that was unchanged, and they conceded three goals, not setting you up in the best way. I think we went into the game on Friday with eight goals conceded in the last three games. I was chatting to Charles about it on the podcast extra, but the FA Cup comes along. It's a team we pretty much expected. There were some question marks. There were fitness clouds hanging over a few players, but Paul McShane and Hal Robson-Kanu were both fit. Matty Vidra wasn't fit enough to start, so that meant Simon Cox has got the chance. Only his second start of the season, and it's come in the sixth round of the FA Cup. He's started in the fifth and sixth round, so he can't really complain too much. He gave his all for 60 minutes, and then we saw 30 minutes of Matty Vidra. But any complaints with the team selection? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, it was pretty much as I thought. We knew that Vidra wasn't going to be fit for the whole 90 minutes, and as you say, came on exactly on the hour mark, so he obviously knew what he was going to get out of him. Cox did well, to be fair to him as well, and we set up in a pretty standard way. It was never going to be a 4-4-2 all guns blazing sort of tactic, so having Hector in the anchor man role was pretty important. I think he did very well against West Brom, so yeah, I'm not going to slag off Brian for how he set up the team that day.
Is this the nail in the coffin of Robson-Kanu's striker dreams?
Oof.
You could, you know, because obviously Kermigan's missing, Vidra's not fit, you could have made the case for Robson-Kanu to start as a striker, bring in McCleary on the right and give that a go. Starting Cox, you know, he did a good job, fair enough, but you could have made the case for Robson-Kanu starting as a striker.
Yeah, I suppose the only argument is then you're sort of making two changes, really, because you're asking Robson-Kanu to adapt and you're asking McCleary to adapt to that Robson-Kanu role. But no, I mean, otherwise, as you said, fairly predictable lineup. We did question whether Ola John would get the start or whether he'd opt for a more defensive option. But no, Ola got the starts. And, you know, if you go and have a look, I very much encourage everybody to go and have a look at Will's tactical analysis on the game that you can read over at thetylersend.com. It's a fascinating look. It basically looks through it, and the main message is that both teams set up to be solid. This wasn't a game that both teams were happy to concede ground or to go for it. Both Reading and Crystal Palace were very happy to not get beat. And that very much shone through in the game. It was a match of very few chances from open play. Palace having a few more than Reading. But most of the time it was down to set pieces. And that's the big disappointment for me, Steve, is that Reading set pieces, when they did get them, and they did get some promising openings, they just weren't good enough.
Yeah, Ollie Norwood's deliveries weren't really good enough, were they? It's worrying. It's a worrying trend. We've only scored, it's at one corner all season.
And yeah.
Free kicks, we're not really a threat from direct set pieces. And it's just generally what's going on. Is it a coach's problem? Is it a personnel problem? I know Abita was taking a few at one point. Is he still taking them, or is it always Norwood? And if Norwood's in the team for his set piece threat, and he's not doing it, then you got to think maybe it's time he has some time out of the team and bring in Williams or someone, because generally he's not offering very much in the game at the moment.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Norwood, Mark? He's coming for a bit of a stick, notably from us on this podcast over the past few weeks, but how do you stand on Norwood?
The problem is that you sort of wonder what his role in the team is. That if he's a playmaker, then he's got to get more. He's got to get forward more. He's got to have more of an impact on play. And we saw his set pieces. One of them was so bad that it set away a Crystal Palace attack on Friday night. And if he can get that sense back, then he'll have a good role in the team. But if Quinn and Williams are a potential partnership, and Hector's doing well, and we've also got Evans who can have a go, you've got to wonder how long his spell in the team will last, because he's been a pretty much consistent fixture every game this season. I can't think of many that he hasn't started, but he's got that under threat now, probably the biggest threat to it that he's had in a good while.
Yeah, and it's interesting now that it's two seasons in a row that he sort of dropped off after the Christmas period. You do just sort of wonder what his really long-term role is. In this setup, it's hard to know what it is, because he's given that freedom to roam and go forward, but he's not really using it. We're not seeing defence splitting passes. And he has had players with a little bit of pace in front of him. He's had a Matty Vidra for long chunks of season, but we're not seeing those sort of incisive passes we want to see that we maybe saw, you know, a couple of decades ago, not that old, from Simon Osborne types or a Darren Caskey. Not quite got that string to his bow at the moment. And whether that's, as you say, a confidence issue or just a form thing, I'm not sure. But One man who has been lighting up the Badesky in recent weeks is Ola John. He had Reading's two best chances. The first one in particular, a golden chance to set up someone for a tap-in. He's on the byline and just basically goes for goal at an almost impossible angle. Mark, what do you think went through Ola John's head when he took that chance?
Well, probably very little went through his head. He was so aware of, he's so aware of the fact that he was near the goal and that he didn't really know what angle he was at. So he just punted it aimlessly towards it. It hits the side netting. But if he'd have taken a moment to look up, he might have found someone. But like I found the same when I was watching it, it was such a blink and you'll miss it moment. It's come out of unexpectedly, Hennessy's flapped it across. And he's not really been very composed in that. And that is a little bit worrying. But the speed of the whole move just really sort of took him by surprise, I think.
His decision-making isn't the best. We've seen he can light up the Majewski and he does provide moments of magic, but sometimes his decision making you do question it, and I think that's a prime example of just, you know, he could be a really, really good player, but he's just got something a bit missing, I guess, from his mental side of his game.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was speaking to some lads from the Planet Benfica website who cover Benfica in English, and they were sort of saying pretty much that. There were questions about his decision making, sort of the more mental aspects of the game. Benfica fans very much saw him as a great impact substitute, and it's just quite strange how the same notes are hitting for him at Reading. Although in recent weeks he's proven himself more of a starter, but we've talked about Ola John at length in the last few shows, and me and Charles talked about it just Friday on the podcast extra. It's very hard to see him being here at the Medeski Stadium next season, so enjoy him while you've got him. He also had a header in the second half that he did quite well with. He put it on target, did challenge Hennessy, but it, you know, unfortunately didn't do enough to beat him, but you can't ask for a lot more than getting on target. The one man who has absolutely no need to make an apology for his performance on the night was Ali Alhabsi. An absolutely fantastic display in my book, Steve. His best game in a Reading shirt.
Yeah, without doubt. On our player ratings, I see he's got like 91% or something of the vote. And my main question is, why are other people voting for the other players? You know, he deserves like 100%. He kept us in that game. And even the goals we conceded, he got hands to and he was there. And, he, you know, you can't fault him for anything in that game. It was quite a remarkable performance.
Has he done enough, Mark, in the past few weeks and months to convince you that he should be the number one going forward into next season?
Yeah, just about. I don't really think he's going to get any better. He's quite far down the road now, and he is so erratic. Like, he will drop crosses every now and then. Like, you can guarantee it. Like, in terms of Football Manager ratings, you give him a 21 for eccentricity, because he's got so much coming and going in terms of one moment he's making a great save, the next moment he's sort of flapping it across in the 90th minute, that is a bit worrying. But that is what you're going to get. Like, he is a good goalkeeper. You don't play in the Premier League for so many years without any talent. But I think this year, probably next year, he will be number one, purely because Bond isn't necessarily ready yet, and you're not going to buy someone for a third goalkeeper.
Yeah, it's difficult with them both under contract. Stuart Moore's out on loan at Peterborough as well, so it looks like he's going to be a decent third choice option as well. Steve, it's hard to see them spending money there.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't know our financial situation, so it's hard to speculate at the moment just how much money we've got to make those kind of signings. You can't really see the ties justifying going and buying another goalkeeper. They'll be like, well, we bought you two last season, you know, that type of thing. And I think Alhabsi is good enough for the short term. You can get another season or two out of him. By then, Jonathan Bond might be showing something close to being a decent goalkeeper, and Stuart Moore might be doing all right by then. So I can't see, as much as we'd ideally like a new goalkeeper, I can't really see it happening unless a sale is made.
Yeah, and he's showing what made him so popular at Bolton and Wigan as well. I'm shamelessly stealing from this from you in the first take of this show, but he's become a real cult favourite amongst the fans. You know, diving into the crowd the other week, you know, his penalty save against Burnley. He's really showing why he did play in the Premier League for so long, and it's just a shame that those little errors are still in his game. And we even saw it, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was in the Fulham game, his handling wasn't all you wanted it to be, and that's why, unfortunately, he is no longer a Premier League goalkeeper, and he was a free transfer for Reading. But let's get down to the main event then, the decision that ultimately cost Reading this game. Jake Cooper puts his arm across Bolasie with 5 minutes left on the clock inside the area. Bolasie goes down like he's been shot. and Mike Dean points to the spot and gives a penalty. For me, I was sat there in Y25, directly opposite it, and my first instinct was, oh, he's going to go booking for diving. And then you had that horrible sinking realisation that, oh no, he's given a penalty. Mm. And, you know, Caballé makes no mistake. Al Habsidi does get a hand to it, but it goes in. And, I mean, it incensed everybody in the crowd, you know, media, everybody, I think, is in agreement that it's a very soft penalty. Mm. And this is what Brian's had to say on it. He said, their player has gone down really easily. Did he need to go down as easy as that? No. That's the answer to that. But that's what happens in this day and age, so you can't raise your hand and give referees a call to make. Jake will learn from that, but unfortunately the referee made a call and it's gone against us. Crystal Palace had a penalty given against them on Sunday, and we've had one given against us tonight. That's football.
That is football. I'm going to comment and say that Bolasie showed as much balance as a Jenga tower. In fact, I think a Jenga tower might have stayed standing.
Are we talking Jenga tower at the start of a game or Jenga tower after about 25 moves and everyone's had a few tequilas?
Either. I think the tower would have stayed up if Cooper had touched it the same way he touched Bolasie. It wasn't on. It really annoyed me. Even watching the highlights, it annoyed me more every time I watched it. I was like, ah, come on, you're a man, like an actual fully grown adult, you know, like, what are you doing? It's really annoying. But you can't, it's true, you know, it's a shame that what McDermott said is it's true. That is football nowadays. You've got to kind of deal with it. And you can't see this going out of our game anytime soon, because it seems, in fact, more and more people are going down too easily to get that, you know, almost certain goal, rather than standing up, trying to get a shot off and kind of be more up and at them. They're more up and down.
I see what you were trying to do there. Yeah. Darren has tweeted us in saying, Premier League referees have an inbuilt bias for Premier League teams. Myth or reality?
Well, that's what happened in this case, wasn't it? Because you've seen Crystal Palace get done by the bigger team on the weekend before, then we get done by the bigger team. It is kind of how it works. We know that. I'm not sure it ever really goes in our favour, but we're a bit far down the ladder for it to really matter. In the grand scheme of things, it wasn't a penalty in my view, but McDermott's right. 99 times out of 100, it's not a penalty. 1 times out of 100, it gets given. It got given against us in the biggest game of the season. That's sod's law. The only thing I will say about Cooper is Bolasie is quite close to the ball. There's even an outside chance that he might get onto it. So that's where his bad decision-making has come in. But he's so inexperienced, Cooper. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the best decision to play him in the game anyway. So given that Ferdinand and McShane would have been a very solid idea of partnership there. So yeah, it's just one of those things. We'll have to lump it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, Steve, a bit of a backlash towards Jake Cooper on social media and in the comments section of our player ratings. A few people sort of going along sort of with what Mark said, that is it right to be carrying him in the team? I mean, he's given away 2 penalties now in the last 3 games. He's had a bit of a wobble and showing that inexperience. But, I mean, do you think the criticism is justified?
No, and I think even, you know, you said carrying him in the team then, that is really, really harsh. Bearing in mind, he hasn't even started 30 games for Reading in the league, or, you know, some ridiculous stat like that.
Yeah, 27 starts in his entire professional career. That's across league and cup games.
Yeah, so he's only ever played in the Championship. He's never had time out on loan to learn his trade. And we've said on this podcast numerous times, if you're going to throw players into the deep end like this, you've got to put up with their growing pains. And you can't have your cake and eat it type thing. You know, you've got to, if you're going to play Cooper, which we seemingly are, you've just got to deal with those mistakes. And it's not that he's a bad player, or, you know, he's really awful and he's not deserving to be playing in the Championship. It's just that he's inexperienced, and you know, deal with it. He'll iron those wrinkles out, give him more experience. He'll make more mistakes and he'll learn from them.
Yeah. I'd say it is a bit of a risky game playing Cooper, because the thing is, McDermott said himself about Pierce some years back that you don't really know a true centre-back's potential until you have 100 games in the league. And he's so far off that. And that's why we're not really going to know if he's a potential Premier League class player or just another John Mackey in, you know, 1-2 years' time. That's how long it will take for him. And we've got
he's showing at the moment that he's a Championship standard player. You know, even if he doesn't iron out those wrinkles and he stays, you know, as he is at the moment, he's still good enough to play regularly in the Championship. And at the moment, that's what we need.
Yeah, and to be able to show those sort of qualities at the young age with the level of inexperience we're talking about, it's a massive credit to him. I think he's doing well. I agree. I mean, it's very frustrating to see him make those mistakes. And, you know, some people are saying, well, is he learning from them? Well, it's going to take time. And as you say, you just got to put up with those growing pains. So, you know, don't take it too hard, Jake. Everybody makes mistakes. And that could have been anybody in that big game. You know, we've seen far more experience. Look at Ali El-Habsi. You know, we're talking about how great he was on Friday night. But against Everton, he arguably got us knocked out of the cup. Because he let through Delafeu's free kick.
Yeah, and I think you need to give Cooper a little bit of leeway because he scored the only corner we've scored this season.
Absolutely, corner hero. I think he scored the last two before that as well.
Yeah, against Norwich, wasn't it?
So yeah, that was a hell of a debut, wasn't it?
Cut him some slack.
Exactly. So yeah, ultimately, I mean, that proves just about the end of the game. There was no way back for Reading. They were dead on their feet. And the only thing that really, really wound me up about the penalty, beyond the fact that it was soft, was Alan Pardew's reaction after the game. Now, this is a man who was happy to stand on his soapbox the week before, as, you know, we've heard, and he sort of really had a go at Christian Benteke for going down easily in the last minute of their Premier League game, sort of, you know, saying about contact levels and things like that, and he was looking for it, yada, yada, yada. This one happens. What does he say? Oh, well, you know, I really shouldn't talk about penalties because I don't know anything about them. Sort of sneaks back off onto the team coach and happily dreaming about Wembley. Now, former Tullist End podcast guest and overall Reading hero, Shaka Hislop, didn't take too kindly to that series of events. He had a right go at him in the media, saying that he should have come out and condemned Bolasie for his dive the same way that he had a go. Shouldn't say dive, for going down too easily, the same way he did for Benteke the week before. But no, he doesn't have that moral fibre, does Pardew? He sort of backs and shies away from it, and as I said, hops back on the coach and goes away. Am I being too high? Are me and Shaka being too harsh on Alan?
No. He's that kind of man. He's that kind of manager. He's forever
slimy.
You know, yeah, slimy, weaselly. I mean, not going too personal here, Alan. Sorry, but he's displayed this numerous times throughout his managerial career. When things go against him, he's happy to jump on that soapbox and start shouting, but as soon as it goes for him, he kind of slinks back into the shadows, and it's what you get with him. Expect it.
Very interesting, this sort of episode coming in the week where we've had Joel Hufford's interview up on the Tullist End, where he was talking about how hard it was to deal with Pardew as a manager. Look, I've got a tremendous amount of respect for him for what he's done in his career. He's obviously done some great things, not just, you know, at Reading, but elsewhere. So respect for him. But I just would have liked to have seen him come out and just be a bit fair. It wouldn't have, especially when you've won it, I think it would have been quite easy for him to come out and say, look, I'm not very happy about, you know, the conduct of my player, especially after what happened on Sunday. I'd like to think we're better than that. Unfortunately, he went down. Even if he thinks it's a penalty decision, you can just have a little bit of a go at your own player. And even if I don't even care then if you go back into the dressing room and say, oh, I was actually just, you know, that was just for the cameras. Don't worry about it.
Pat him on the back. Well done.
Exactly.
Good lad.
Yeah.
But just that's almost certainly what he did as well.
Yeah, just in public, you know, have a bit of fibre. And as I said, because it's hard to take him seriously the next time he comes. It doesn't do him any favours and it just winds up people. But then again, he got a bit of a frosty reception from the Reading fans anyway, so maybe that was his little way of giving a little bit back to the Reading fans, who once again gave him plenty of stick and some choice language, shall we say. But just before we move on then, a few more comments from yourselves on the game. We've got from Neil Love. He says, Cox worked hard, but Vidra made a difference. Would love him to be here next season. Louis Burton says, gutted, but find it easy to take as Palace were better than us and our awful, awful set pieces were the death of us. And a very interesting one from David Spencer. He says, this felt like Reading under McDermott in the Premier League. We looked okay, but mostly unthreatening. No cutting edge until Vidra came on. Has McDermott been scarred by that Prem season? Has he sat up cautiously? Bench was as good as theirs, yet we didn't go for it.
The bench can be as good as theirs, but the first team wasn't. And Will said on the tactical analysis on the website, he said it came down to quality, and you can't argue that Palace have that quality. I said on the podcast last week, if a player like Zaha has a good game, we're going to lose. And he had a good game, and Bitter, you know, he's going to take a while to bounce back from that shredding. But yeah, they've got pace, they've got quality throughout the side, and they might not be showing it in the league at the moment, but they deserve to win, and I don't think you can really argue
Well, we can't forget that Palace are one of the top 10 teams in the country at the moment in the league, and their away form has been even better than a lot of other teams in the Premier League. So it's not like we were playing West Brom, who were at the complete doldrums, potentially fighting against relegation. Palace were a better team than that, and they showed that they were a better team. They played better than West Brom did. And I don't think us setting up to attack against a team with out-and-out pace and a good counter-attacking sense was going to be the right mode to take this game on.
No, and as I said, just go check out Will's analysis for the breakdown, and completely agree. I mean, it was a game Crystal Palace deserved to win. I don't think many people can have an argument with that. I think they had something like 25 shots, best part of 13 quarters, and you just have to look at the fact that Al-Habsi won man of the match in a 2-0 defeat. Says it all, really. So congratulations to them. They'll go on to Wembley. They've got a good chance of making the final as well. Some good teams in that draw, in terms of lower teams anyway, with Watford there, West Ham or Man United and Everton as well. So it's anybody's FA Cup, and at least makes it exciting to watch. But alas, we won't be going to Wembley this year. At least some people got to go last year, right? Yeah, right.
Correct.
Still not over it yet, Dan.
Absolutely not. And I'll finish with Brian's words saying, our priority has to be the league. We don't really want our season to be about FA Cup runs. We want it to be about winning league games. That's what we have to be about. Agreed.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. And with that in mind, let's move on to some very quick news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Not an awful lot going around on the news front right now, but one point I did want to bring up very briefly was the form of Dom Samuel at Gillingham. Scored again at the weekend against Crewe, also created a goal. That's seven for him now since he's been out on loan. And I'm just wondering your opinion, chaps. Is it time for Brian to bring him back, or is he best left where he is?
Best left where he is. He's best left getting those minutes. He's guaranteed starts. He's guaranteed to keep playing. And I'm going to steal Mark's point from the previous recording. He's going to get more from being in a promotion push than being in a mediocre mid-table championship team that may or may not give him minutes. And if they do, it might not be from the start. And you may as well keep him there and give him a go in pre-season and see what he can do next season.
That's an excellent point, Steve. Well made.
Anything to add, Mark? Anything to add to what you said before?
No, I think I agree with myself, actually. I think, bringing him back for the odd start in a championship dead rubber isn't going to be as good as playing in a League One promotion push. They did Sean Morrison a lot of good playing at Huddersfield in a similar sort of scenario. So, yeah, I'm happy for him to stay.
Yeah, I think I agree. I would like to see what he could do, but the benefit he's going to get by staying at Gillingham is more, I think, as you say. I think we can't be selfish with this. And the very fact is we're still paying Matty Vidra, Jan Kermigan, Dennis Rackles. So we might as well give them a chance, you know, to see what they can do in front of us as well. So
Simon Cox.
Yeah.
And McDermott rates him highly. McDermott gave him his debut in the Premier League, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
So, you know, I can imagine McDermott will seriously be looking at him for next season and saying, you know, finish your season there, we'll bring you back and we'll give you a go next season.
Yeah, very much agreed. And just before we move on, a couple of bits of Tarlhurst End news. Firstly, as mentioned, new mugs are on the way. If you have signed up to our crowdfunding campaign and you're in that top two tiers, you will be receiving a brand new mug in the next few weeks when I get down to the post office. We've got a new design designed by Sam Hardacre. It's a great little... I'm going to call it great. I don't know, I'm biased, but it is. It's about our bandwagon jumping and about players that we've thrown off the bandwagon in recent seasons. As I said, go check out the Twitter around 8 o'clock on Monday morning to see the design I'm talking about. As I said, a few might make it onto eBay, but the best way for you to pick one up is to join in that crowdfunding campaign, and that will guarantee you one of these excellent new pieces of merch. The other bit of Tarlhurst End news is I did speak to Stuart Archie Lovell last week, a really great hour-long chat talking about his time at Reading and also touching on what he did after he left Reading, his time up in Scotland, winning cups up there, and what he's doing now and his work with the Scottish PFA. So a really interesting interview. As for when you'll be able to hear it, it's probably going to go up in International Week. We've also got one in the can with Ibrahima Sonko, so a couple of interviews to stay tuned for. And again, if you haven't given that interview with Joel Hufford, that two-part ago, I really highly recommend you do. A fascinating look for a man who was as close to anyone to the football club during their glory years of going up from the third tier, then again from the Championship up into the right into the Premier League. So some great stories there from Joel, and thank you to him, Archie, Sonks and everybody else who's given their time to the podcast this season. So very much recommend that you go and check those out. But in the meantime, as mentioned, due to unforeseen technical glitches, you won't be able to hear Pub Chat this week. The topic was going to be reasons to still be excited about the rest of the season, but we do have a few questions about that in the mailbag anyway, so we'll come on to that now.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
As always, thank you to everybody who has got in touch with this week via Twitter at the Tarlhurst End using the TTE podcast hashtag. If you've sent your emails into thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, or if you've given us a like over on Facebook at facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. If you give us a like on Facebook, you'll also hopefully have noticed our videos we've started doing around home matches where some glorious faces such as myself and Johnny, Wim Senior. Mark, have you appeared in one yet?
Yeah, well, I was pitch side for the under 21
game. You have,
yeah,
of course
day.
You have.
It's a nice little venture.
Yeah, and Sim, not you yet, Steve.
No, I'm seeing if I can keep my anonymity going. You know, I am at the moment just Blue and White Hoops on Twitter.
We can pixelate your face.
If we can get that sorted, I'll appear in one.
we'll do our best. But yeah, just a little new thing we're trialing. If you like them, you know, let us know if you think they need work. Obviously, the face for radio that I put on definitely needs work. But in terms of the quality and content, do let us know your feedback. Very happy to give new things a go here. So we'll see how that leads on. But meanwhile, as for the mailbag this week, we will start with Brian Davis. He asks, a question for Reading Football Club. Why clap banners on the biggest of occasions when Reading fans generally perform best?
Let's be honest, the banners are a tool, yeah? You don't actually have to use them. And people are always calling for the club to do something to improve the atmosphere and get the fans going. And sure, the fans are already going to be going because it's a massive game, the biggest game of the season. But I don't see why you should criticise the club for having an opportunity to clap banners and make a nice mosaic. You know, that could have been our chance to form the yellow wall of the Medeski, or, you know, something. It could have been something good, but the fans weren't on board. But I don't think you can really criticise the club for providing at least something interesting to the game.
Yeah, I'm not going to hate on them for it. I don't like clappers as a general rule, but that's not Reading's fault, that's football's fault. So, you know, the mosaic didn't really pull off. I'm not really sure people knew what they were doing with the mosaic idea. When it was QPR years and years ago, it wasn't a clapper that people were holding up. It was obviously just like a little sheet of plastic. So maybe something like that needs to be worked on. But, you know, they tried. I'm not going to fault anyone for giving their all.
The clappers hurt my fingers. So
you're using them wrong, mate.
I just clap them, Al. Clap them. And they like really hurt my fingers, so I'm obviously doing something wrong here. Maybe that's why it didn't work. Everyone was hurting their fingers on them.
Absolutely, and everyone's just hurt their ears as you've banged into the mic stand. So apologies for that. If you've just swerved off the road, we'll send assistance to you. No, I've got no problem with it as well. I don't think the mosaic was helped by the traffic issues. There were a lot of people turning up after kickoff. I noticed the usual snarl ups around the Medeski when it's a packed house on a Friday night, and also the fact the kickoff was brought forward by 5 minutes. I wonder how many people that tripped up. Because I only realised it on sort of the morning of the game. So if you were catching the bus and were 5 minutes late, you would have been out of luck. Moving on to some more points about that Palace game on Friday night, we've got Kevin Nicholas, who says there was something missing on Friday. Too many sloppy errors in passing and sharpness up front. All toil, no inspiration. And Sam Stevenson, Ali Alhabsi, even the two goals he almost kept out. Remember the beginning of the season, he's now a different player.
I'm not sure he is a different player. I think he's just showing us his good side, but you can guarantee in like a month's time or something, he'll be showing us our bad side. That's not a criticism. You know, revel in your glorious performance, Ali, but, you know, try and be more consistent with it, please.
Yeah, we sort of touched on the Oliver Norwood sloppiness in possession in sort of the recap, but there was a few others during the beta as well we sort of touched on as well, Mark. Well, what did you put it down to? Was it tiredness? Was it nerves?
Just lack of talent in general.
Oh,
there we go. This is pulling no punches.
We're talking about players that are lower mid-table championship, and there's a reason behind that. I mean, we have had the odd performance which we'd like to fool ourselves as to, you know, when we beat Derby 3-0 last season and when we beat West Brom, we think that this is the normal rate that these players should be playing at. That's the exception rather than the rule. And, you know, there's the term one game too far, and it just turned out that was one game too far for this team.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Can't say more than that. That's the sort of honesty you look for, folks, here on the Tarzan Podcast. No punches pulled.
Yeah,
That was West. That was Westy-esque. He stepped into his seat very, very well. Right, moving on. As I said, we didn't really get to talk through our proposed pub chat topic. Well, we did. You guys just won't hear it, but it will forever live on in our hearts anyway.
Yep. Golden podcasting, that.
I would say, Steve, it was probably the best segment we've ever recorded in the history of the Tyler Sen podcast.
It's the best segment you'll never hear.
Indeed. Maybe one day we'll tell you about it.
No.
No.
Keep it.
No,
keep it to ourselves. Precious.
Come along to the end of season.
I'm precious.
Oh, God. Scary. Come along to the end of season podcast and we will tell you what was said on that magical segment. But anyway, we have got a few questions about the rest of the season, sort of looking forward. And that starts with our own assistant editor, Ollie Allen, who says, Aaron Cole needs to be given a chance to prove he deserves a new contract. Doesn't merit one from what I've seen so far. Steve Bennett says, blood new players for next year. Give them the experience. Keep playing Cooper. And Kevin Flood says, play those who are likely to be here next season once we are 100% safe. So a bit of a theme going there, of sort of blooding new players and giving those a chance. Starting with Aaron Cole, is it time to unleash him once again?
You would like to see him play, but I think Ollie's point of he needs a chance to prove he deserves a new contract. I said the same for McCleary last week. I think he needs to be doing it on the training ground to then get a chance. You know, he's not even on the bench at the moment. Josh Barrett is ahead of him in the pecking order, which indicates that there's something going on, whether that is the contract issue and people are like, well, you're not getting in the team until you sign this contract or whatever. But there's a reason he's not on the bench and we don't know that reason. I doubt we'll find out unless he signs a new contract or something. But I agree that you would like to see us start dropping some low knees and bring in players for next season. But it's difficult because, you know, Tish Boller is injured, so he won't be playing. And you think players like Raquel, is still acclimatising. And it's difficult. It's a difficult one. You wouldn't want to be in McDermott's shoes.
Yeah, Mark, you got to see Aaron Cole playing for the under-21s against Chelsea the other day. He's a man that's been linked with Arsenal. Can you see what Arsenal might have seen in him?
The thing is, he's such an eager player, but he sort of doesn't really have a role. Like, you'd think that he's a deep-line playmaker, but then he did that at Dundee. He's played that for Reading a couple of times and hasn't excelled in it. He's not quite got the physicality, even though he does run quite hard, to be a sort of attacking player. So I think he really needs to work his game out. The thing I worry about him is, like, I wouldn't say I was massively impressed with him against Chelsea. The thing I worry about him is that his future being at Reading won't necessarily help him as a player. I think maybe this might turn out to be one of those situations where a move is better for the club and the player concerned.
Yeah, if he does move, you would like to hope Reading get a decent fee for him. But at the moment, I said he can walk away with just a set by sort of an arbitration committee. So don't know how that one's going to go. I'm a big fan of his. We spoke to him for the Tyler Sen. We did an interview with him earlier in the summer, and he comes across as a really nice, level-headed guy. Yeah. Clearly got bags of ability. You don't come through the ranks in the sort of ways he has without it. So I'd like to see him given a chance, but as you say, Steve, there's obviously something getting in the way right now, so I hope whatever that is resolved. And the whole blooding players and things is one of the big things we brought up in that ill-fated pub chat. You know, it's one of the things to really look forward to for the rest of the season. You know, seeing somebody really take that chance, and it doesn't have to be necessarily one of the youngsters. As you say, it can be a Rackles. It can be a Gareth McCleary. How great would it be to see Gareth McCleary really return to form? Because we've seen what an electric player he is. And that's what these next 11 games give us the opportunity to do.
Yeah. As in that ill-fated pub chat, I did mention I'd like to see some experimentation. So that's what these next 11 games are going to give us, is a chance to see whether McDermott does experiment with the formation, the personnel. Three at the back, anyone? Fancy that?
We only done that once in the last history of our club, and we lost 5-2 to Watford, didn't we, on that game?
Nothing to lose. We can keep losing 5-2. We're already mid-table.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah, and moving along, Chris McCormack says, Palace may have deserved to win, but their fans shouldn't be allowed to hire a box behind G9. Taunting Royals fans from a box in the home stands is not on. Not a lot you can really do about the corporate hospitality thing, is it? I think it is bad out of order from them, but I don't really think it's much the club can do. At the end of the day, you're free to rent a box.
I've seen it quite a few times. The worst thing was when we were in the Premier League and that we had actual away fans sitting in the home stand, masquerading as semi-neutral fans, when if you're in the box, you are semi-segregated. But if you're in amongst the home fans, that's when things get a little bit dangerous.
Would you turn down money on the basis of club loyalty, Steve?
No. Is there a way we can charge them more so that we get more out of them?
Just per goal.
Oh, you're a Crystal Palace fan. Oh, that's £2,000 ahead, please.
I endorse this policy. Yeah. When you phone up, there should be like a, if you're a home fan, press 1. Mm. For away fans, press 2. Get on it, Reading. You've heard this. You listen to this show. I know you do. And also, if you want to provide me with free food and Buxton water, you know where to come.
Or Carabao.
Carabao, yes. Mm. Yeah. Oh, the fascinating decision about Carabao. Hasn't made the cut either. See, we're teasing you with all these great talking points. You won't get to hear.
We'll just have to wait for my review when I get back from the Far East.
Yes. Oh. You missed Mark boasting about his trip, which he's managed to slip back in here. So we'll skirt over that one as quickly as we did the last time round. Finishing up the tweets is Ben Print, who says, who else would join Leroy Leiter in a Reading FC bad attitude 11? Now, more than welcome to give your thoughts, but I thought I'm going to save this for pub chat next week.
That's a good idea.
I probably won't be on the show next week, so I'm just going to throw out some names.
Go for it.
Immerse Fay.
Yeah.
Andre BK. Is he bad attitude?
I love BK. He was great. He might have a bad attitude, but he was great.
I think his on pitch attitude is more I'm referring to.
Taking he's not off called his shirt BK anymore. He's called like the... I can't say.
I think he's changed back. He's changed. He changed back. Yeah. But one to consider. Get your thoughts in. I said to at the Tarlist and on Twitter, who would make your Reading FC bad attitude 11? And we'll go over our picks in next week's pub chat. And just finishing up on the email front, we have another email from Tom, regular contributor to the show. Thanks again, Tom, for getting in touch. He says, gutted about Friday night. Yeah, we were not perfect and made mistakes. Missed some passes and some defensive naivety, but we can't ignore the elephant in the room. Refereeing quality this season where Reading have been concerned just hasn't been good enough. I'd go as far as say it's been embarrassing, and the FA along with the Football League need to look at it. I can't remember a good referee, yet alone a set of officials we've had at the Manstad in a very long time. This needs attention as they've been determining games for us when we really did not need the extra force against us. And he says, for the remainder of the season, we need to include youth more and inspire older players that have dropped off form, including players that will be in future plans to rebuild and go again for next season. Aaron Cole is one example who needs a chance to prove all the critics wrong. Receives too much stick considering he was messed around by Clark. I think we've covered Aaron Cole there. Is he right? Has referee been that bad?
I don't think it's fair to criticise refereeing for Reading specifically. I bet I can, you know, you can speak to football fans from across the football pyramid and they will almost all say, yeah, we've had awful refereeing performances. And so I don't think it's fair to say, oh, it's specifically Reading. I think generally the quality of refereeing has gone down recently. And that's just, I mean, whether actually I wonder whether it is the quality of the refereeing or whether it's just we're all
savvy.
Yeah, we have the privilege of seeing video replays for every little incident nowadays. So whether we just have our chance to have our opinion and that makes the referees look worse.
Is it harder to officiate now than before, though?
Oh, I think so.
Because players go down so much easier and a lot of the time they're trying to make it look convincing and it doesn't quite, but you still have the home fans shouting for it. And there's more gamesmanship going on now, and I do think that's affecting the way that referees are dealing with it.
And the pace of the game is so much quicker now as well. You know, there are so many pacey players around and, you know, passing intricate play. Sometimes you can barely keep up and you're just watching it, let alone refereeing it.
Yeah, and I don't know what the solution is. I mean, some people are saying, you know, have more professional referees, but Mike Dean is a professional referee and people are criticising his decision making. You know, that's one of the Premier League referees that I think he's refereed games in Europe as well. So if that's the top refereeing, I mean, you know, in all honesty, what hope have you got in the Championship? I think you just want consistency from 1 week to this. And this is what winds me up when Premier League referees come down to games or the referee cup games. It's a slightly different set of rules, it seems to me. What's a foul in the Premier League isn't always a foul in the Championship and vice versa. And it does take one team or the other to adapt to that sometimes. So... But again, I don't know what you can do unless you make every referee professional and you start rolling them off a production line.
Yeah, and you don't want video refereeing because that would just slow the pace of the game right down. It'd almost get boring.
Yeah, it's one for another pub chat, I think, in terms of challenge systems and things like that, though.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure how video refereeing would even change the Palace decision because they'd look at it and be like, oh, yeah, he's touched him, that's a penalty, and that'd be that.
Yeah, it's a bit like with decisions in cricket where it comes down to umpire's call. It can be, well, that's, you know, it might have just been missing, but we've got to sort of go with the umpire. you've got to have conclusive proof to overrule it. And as you said, Mark, he did touch him. It may not have been great contact, but he was technically blocking him. So here's what it is. But yeah, thank you once again, Tom, for your feedback. And thank you to everybody who's got in touch. I apologise if I said we've missed you out. We have had a tricky show, as we've mentioned a few times, but we've hopefully done our best. As I said, please keep your thoughts coming in for the rest of the season. We're not going anywhere. We'll be back week in, week out. And even if it's a more general topic, doesn't have to be something directly related to this week, as Ben's done, you know, send in a more random thought about something from the past or a question you've always wondered or your thoughts on a player. We're more than happy to receive them at the Tirelist End on Twitter. thetirelistend@gmail.com is the email, and facebook.com/thetirelistend as well for the videos, for the website where you can see our lovely videos as well. So go on, give us a like over there. In the meantime, we will very hopefully wrap this show up with any other business.
The Tirelist End Podcast. Any other business.
Now, just because we're out of the FA Cup doesn't mean we can afford to go home for the summer, unless you're Mark and you're swanning off to Thailand. For the rest of us, we have 11 championship games to worry about, and Reading have actually got a big part to play in the promotion race and in the relegation race as well. Reading are playing three teams currently in and around that top five. We've got Brighton on Tuesday night, and we've also got Middlesbrough and Hull a little later in the season. So Reading can really play spoilers and teams to face at the bottom as well. We've also got to take on... completely lost my mind now. We are playing one team down the bottom whose name escapes Bolton. Me. Fill me out. That's it. No, well done, Mark. That's why you're on this show. Bailing me out in trouble after nearly 2 hours of recording. We have got to play Bolton. And, you know, after 95, you know, 21 years on, wouldn't it be a little bit satisfying to help send Bolton down?
Can we mathematically be the team that send them down?
I was working this out earlier. I'm not sure we can. I think it's a bit early.
I think it depends how their case with HMRC goes, because if they end up in administration with minus 15 points...
Yeah, they've got new owners now, though.
Yeah, but they can still be in trouble, I suppose. But anyway, we'll see. So, as we mentioned, lots to look forward to the end of the season. We're not going anywhere. And as we mentioned, there's a lot to play for Reading. And they've got to put out, you know, strong sides for the integrity of the league. And Brian's got to try and figure out. He's got to try and build that momentum. We've seen what's happened in previous years when, you know, you get on a roll. Look at Bournemouth. They got on a roll towards the end a couple of seasons ago. You remember them thrashing us at Dean Court along the way. And they carried that form into the next season. And look where that took them. So, chance to build something. That all starts with Brighton tomorrow. As I said, the team in that promotion hunt, they're fourth in the championship with 65 points. That's just the 21 more than us at the moment. They're 9 points behind Burnley with a game in hand. And they're 2 points behind second place Borough, who have played the same number of games. They're in fantastic form as well. They've only lost one of their last 10, and they've not lost at home since New Year's Day against Wolves. General, what are you expecting for this? Are you expecting a real reaction from Reading, or do you think there'll be a bit of a hangover from Friday night?
You would like there to be a reaction. You would like to see some kind of fight. You would like to see at least going for it. I think, especially now, as we've said, there's not really much to play for. We're kind of cemented in that mid-table position. You'd like to see McDermott just kind of go for it, you know, unleash the 4-4-2, just have a right go at it and see kind of what happens. Brighton are obviously very dangerous. There's a number of players on their last team against Sheffield Wednesday that kind of stand out. Not to mention Steve Sidwell.
And Liam Rossignol.
And Anthony Knockert is... I quite like him. I've seen him play for a few years and he's a good player, he is. So they're dangerous. But that doesn't mean that Reading can't beat them, because Reading generally kind of up their game a bit against these boys near the top of the table.
Yeah, what are you expecting, Mark?
Thinking the only sort of reaction we might find is an allergic one, because we're playing these teams at the worst possible time. I mean, yeah, we sort of ruined Derby's fun last year, but we've seen Brighton have one defeat in their last 10 and Cardiff have two defeats in their last 11, and both of them have so much more to play for than we do, and I do kind of fear that we're going to be sitting here this time next week with 0 points under our belt from these two games.
Yeah, well, after that lovely trip down to the Amex Stadium, we welcome Cardiff to the Mad Stad. They are 7th in the Championship at the moment on 58 points, which is 14 more than we've got. They're 1 point behind 6th place Sheffield Wednesday. And as you mentioned, they're in fantastic form as well. Two defeats in the last 11, including 6 wins and 3 draws. their last time out, they beat a big playoff rival, Ipswich, 1-0. And again, it's a team that have got a lot of players that helped them win promotion last time and played in the Premier League. So they're a strong side as well. Finally clicking into form under Russell Slade. But it is Reading at home. Got that chance to win, and fingers crossed they can raise that game.
Yeah. Yeah. You want them to put up a fight. I think that's, especially at home, that's all Reading fans are going to be expecting at the moment. I don't think they'll be going into any game expecting them to win necessarily, unless it's Bolton. But they wouldn't go in expecting them to beat the likes of Cardiff. But they will be expecting some sort of fight, some sort of show that you're up for this and you're not already on your summer holidays, because you can see things going pretty sour in the stadium if that does happen.
Do we ever beat Cardiff?
It doesn't feel like it. I've been to the last two away games and it's
awful.
The
FA Cup and the playoff semi-final, I know, but they're a bit of exceptions. And thinking back in the league, especially at home, I don't think I've ever seen us beat Cardiff.
It's going allergic back a while. Reaction.
Maybe 2006.
Allergic reaction to the Welsh.
Yeah, I do remember thrashing Cardiff in the 106 season. Remembering the game solely because I came back from university, was up in the far north, came back down, pitching up to the Badeski as I usually did on a match day back then, only to be told for the first time in my life, sorry, it's sold out. And I was like, what? This is a Reading game. I sat and watched us play Chesterfield in front of 8,000 people here. What do you mean it's sold out? It was like, oh, you sold all the tickets. It was the first day that half season tickets kicked in.
I got one of those half season tickets as well.
Boo.
I was quite the plastic.
Why didn't you tell me before this show started? I would have not let you on. not much more to say then. Team wise, I would expect change on Tuesday. I think they'll give a few people a rest that have been playing a lot, but it'll still be interesting to see exactly how Brian deals with it. I will be back with Charles before the Cardiff game as well. But neither of you two are in the Prediction League, unfortunately.
No.
And given that the game against Palace didn't count, not been a lot of change, but the Huddersfield game did, and it was another 3 points for Johnny Williams, who has closed the gap now to just 3 points on Charles at the top. So it's all getting a bit dicey. Westie's also closed the gap on me. I'm only 1 point clear of him now.
Oh,
so yeah,
chance of being relegated.
Wow, I finished first last year and now I'm in danger of being fourth out of fifth. I've done a Chelsea.
And it's typical the Arsenal fan is sort of wavering at the top as
You weren't there. You're
pulling punches all over the place. Pulling punches.
No one's safe.
Well, the other lads have got their predictions into me for the game, so for a matter of public record. Handbags has gone for a 3-1 defeat at Brighton and a 1-1 draw against Cardiff. Westie says a 2-0 win to Brighton and a 3-1 win for Cardiff. Charles has gone for, obviously we're speaking on Friday, so he's only giving me one of his predictions. And he has gone for a 2-0 win to Brighton as well. And just to complete the set, we have Deputy Editor Johnny Williams, who has also gone for a 3-1 win to Brighton and a 1-1 draw with Cardiff. So nobody giving us a hope of getting anything at Cardiff.
All feeling very positive.
Sorry, at Brighton, yeah. So in a desperate bid to claw back the points, I'm going to go bold and say we will draw 1-1 with Brighton.
It's very a sad bold state of affairs that's a bold prediction that we'll get a 1-1 draw at Brighton.
Well, there you go. I've got to take gambles now, Mark. I'm still trying to win this league. I'm not just trying to stay ahead of Westie. No, I'm still trying to win this. So I've set myself up in an attacking formation. I've gone overload.
Three at the back.
Yeah.
Like McDermott.
Yeah, I'm going gung-ho.
It's just not going
to
happen.
But anyway, this does wrap up the show. Gentlemen, an extra special thanks to the two of you. We started recording this at 7:30 and I've just looked at the clock and it's now 9:30. So while you'll only be hearing the best part of 50 minutes of audio, just know that that we've given our all for you this week.
And you've missed out on many golden nuggets.
Indeed.
But we hope
you've enjoyed what you've heard so far. As mentioned, I will be back with Charles for the podcast extra. Hopefully, although there is a pending baby on the way for Charles, and given the tendency for wacky things to happen on Friday when we're about to record, I wouldn't be surprised to see it arrive on that day. So stay tuned to the Twitter feed for that. Also, my interview with Archie Lovell and the previously mentioned one with Ibrahima Sonko, they'll be up in the coming weeks as well. So stay tuned even for those. And once again, if you have got a few extra pennies lurking around and you want to help support this unprofessional joke of a show, please do get in touch with us and join in the crowdfunding campaign. It is very much appreciated by all of us here at the website and lets us provide a better service to you as fans. So, give your money to the cause. Anyway, on that stirring battle note.
Yeah, round of applause. Does that?
No, thank you. That's clap right. Banners.
Yeah. Ooh, clap banners. I learned my fingers.
Yeah. Anyway, as I said, Mark, Steve, thank you very much indeed. Hopefully we'll be back next Monday to round up a couple more championship games. But in the meantime, come on, you are. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.